just had enough of that. That was supposed to stop sooner than it did. That's what they have the off button for. Anyway, good evening, everyone. This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this, of course, is DS Radio. I have a little announcement to make, two of them, actually. My legal advisor says, I must say that no one is pretending to be an attorney. No one's trying to practice law. Nobody's pretending to practice law. All anybody's doing is reporting their encounters with the law. So, you know, leave it at that. And I don't know why we can't practice at it. The people are practicing law, don't seem to know much about it. On the other hand, tonight is our 800th broadcast on Blog Talk. We're in our seventh year. This is 800 shows. You ought to quit.
Congratulations.
You ought to quit. I should have known
Surprise.
Better. I should have known better. And, of course, everybody, that's my co-host, Debbie Dahmer. She's a real thorn in my side. I don't know what I'm doing there. But anyway, we've got an excellent guest tonight for you, and he's been with us several times before. He has a new book out. And this case, I know you had to have seen it on 2020. They went over and did a hatchet job on this lady. But Mike Volpe has written a book called Sandra Gazzini's Rookie and the World's Last Custody Trial. It's available on Amazon. And I've got a live link right there in the show promo to the book. And this is just a story of corruption, the abuse of children via the courts. And it's just unbelievable. Mike, I want to welcome you to the show. And I don't know how you pump out these books like this, but apparently you can do it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And I want to mention, first of all, it's available almost anywhere. Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, go anywhere online. So prominently Amazon. And I co-wrote this book. Sandra Gazzini Rookie is a litigant in a custody as well. It's also part of a criminal matter. I wrote it with her lawyer for part of that custody trial. Her name is Michelle McDonald. Just recently ran unsuccessfully for Minnesota Supreme Court. And yeah, it's you had me on before, shortly after the 2020 episode aired. And, you know, it's a story that's, I don't know if well-known is the proper term, but it's certainly been covered a lot. And so if you watch the coverage or you followed the court case, you're bound to believe that Sandra Gazzini Rookie is crazy. And in order to punish her ex-husband in the middle of a nasty divorce, she hid her two daughters for 2.5 years with strangers. That's the story that you would believe if you were watching 2020 or reading the Minneapolis Star Tribune or following the court case. And Michelle and I felt like with all of that coverage out there, at some point somebody needs to tell the truth. And the truth is that Sandra Gazzini Rookie and her five children were all abused by her ex-husband throughout the marriage. And then when the divorce started, basically it started as a simple divorce that David Rookie, not just David Rookie, David Rookie's her ex, but basically the court system turned convoluted, and mostly they turned it convoluted in order to hide the abuse. And then courts from there would need to cover up for the initial court, which was hiding the abuse. And for reasons that aren't entirely clear, the media, both local and national, has covered up for all of that. And as a result, five children are forced to live with their abuser. Protective mother is in jail and not allowed to see her children. And a monster and a very, very dangerous man has total control over his five children.
Go ahead, Mike.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I saw that 2020 report, and if you had gone solely on that, you'd have thought this woman was crazy as a bat out of hell. But when you knew the background story and the subsequent events, you know, apparently she isn't. And as far as the star trip goes, we're real familiar with that around here. And you don't put anything of consequence in the star trip. You just don't. And I don't know what their game is, but they've been that way for years.
Right. And so we go over all of the evidence of the abuse, and the evidence is a bunch of police reports, despite what you heard on 2020. There are Child Protective Services reports. There are audio tapes which the kids make. There are letters which the kids wrote. There are third parties which witnessed the abuse. You know, one of Sandra's flight attendant friends happened to be changing when David Ruckey runs into the house, rips all of the pictures off of the wall, and then threatens to kill Sandra. Another guy who wanted to remain anonymous, he was at a bar when David Ruckey said he'd hire the Hells Angels to beat up his ex-wife. At that point, she was his ex-wife. And there's an incident which happened at one of the kids' 13th birthday party. The oldest, Nico, once said that when he was 8 years old, his father stuck a gun into his head.
Oh, my God.
The evidence of abuse is actually overwhelming. And what the court, so basically, can I start it at the beginning?
Sure, of course.
Okay, so basically, this is a very tumultuous marriage full of abuse, which lasts 20 years, but for whatever reason, it looks like the divorce is actually going to be very, very simple. And it's basically done in 3 months. And essentially, David gets all of the money, and his ex gets sole custody of the kids with him getting reasonable visitation, except the kids didn't want to see him, so they stopped seeing him. And what David Ruckey did was, after an initial divorce decree was signed, sealed, and done with, he challenged it with a new lawyer. And at the same time he challenged it, a new judge comes in, a guy named David Knutson, and they're allowed, even though there's a final divorce decree. A final divorce decree is like, you know, it's like the ending of a contract.
Right.
You know, you don't just open it up. You have to have a really legitimate reason. We go through what they claim were the reasons, but of course it's all bogus. So it's opened up, and then David Ruckey, it's opened up based on like this very convoluted fraud. But after it's opened up, even though he claims this convoluted fraud, the rest of the divorce, he just claims that he's an alienated parent, which basically what he was saying is, kids don't want to see me because Sandra is poisoning them against me. It's not that I put a gun into my son's head when he was 8 years old. My son doesn't want to see me because my ex is poisoning his mind. It's not that I, you know, ran after my daughter on her 13th birthday party, which he did. It's that my ex is poisoning my daughter's mind, and that's why my daughter doesn't want to see me. And the court allowed all of this, and then worse than that, what the court did was introduce a whole bunch of experts who aren't really experts. All of them were biased in favor of this idea of parental alienation. And in the meantime, Sandra's rights were basically slowly devolved until she was forcibly removed from her home and told to only take the belongings that she could fit into a small suitcase, and that her children would stay in her home while she's not there anymore, and someone else would take care of them. And
what?
From there, I'm sorry to say what?
Yeah, somebody else was staying in her home with her children.
Correct. So what the court did is the court determined that because Sandra Garzini-Ruckey was this parent alienator, it was an emergency situation, and she could no longer have any contact with her children. But at the same time, the court didn't think that David Ruckey, her ex-husband, should have any contact with the children either. So what the court does is they ordered Sandra out of her home, and then ordered David's sister to move into her home and take care of their kids, at least temporarily, while they basically figure it out. Yes, in America, with no warrants, no notice, no hearing, a judge can order, can deem, and you need to leave your home. That's correct. Despite what you think about the Constitution, I know it happens because I've got the transcripts.
Right.
So she's removed from her home. The kids wound up actually running away, four of them. Nico, the oldest, stayed in the home. The other ones ran away and started living with the other aunt, the aunt on Sandra's side. And eventually, all the kids were once again forced to live with their paternal aunt, that's David's sister. And on the day the kids were forced to do this, two of them ran away. And they remained missing for 2.5 years. The entire time, people presumed that Sandra had a hand in it. Eventually, there was evidence produced that she did have a hand in it. The kids were found in November of 2015. Sandra was recently put on trial. And what they did at the trial was Sandra argued that she had genuine fear for the kids' safety if they were allowed to stay in the custody arrangement they were in. And what the judge did was any and all evidence which might bear that out, she just refused to allow it into the trial. So David Ruckey's strong criminal record, not allowed. CPS reports, not allowed. The fact that the four different people had orders of protection against him, not allowed. So what they basically did was they stopped her defense cold, and as a result, she was found guilty of, it's called parental deprivation. And, you know, we go into a whole bunch of other things, but this is a, not only a family court, but a criminal court which is covering up this abuse. And they've turned this vicious monster, in my opinion, David Ruckey, into the victim, and they turned the protective parent, Sandra Gorzini Ruckey, into the villain. And the reality is the exact opposite. And the media has basically been compliant. Mm-hmm. 2020, even though they had all of this evidence of abuse, they didn't report any of it. Minneapolis Star Tribune, if you were reading the Minneapolis Star Tribune, you have no idea that David Ruckey has a criminal record.
Right.
You know, I came onto this story, and a few weeks later, I break, like, the multitude of crimes that this guy's been either charged or convicted with. And that was in, like, 2-3 weeks. And they'd all been reporting on it for, like, 2 years. And they never, none of them, you know, there's a central system which is available for anyone, not just reporters. Like, Mark, you can go look it up. And apparently none of them looked up his criminal history. I mean, they did look it up, and they just decided not to report it. So you're not going to know
there
any
you
of that. You're not going to know that people have taken out orders for protection against him. There's a whole series of things that the media refuses to report, and as a result, they make Sandra Gorzini Ruckey look like she's crazy, like she hid the kids just to punish David. But in reality, she hid the kids because they were deathly afraid of what was going to happen if they were forced to live with him. And really, at the time, they were being forced to live with his sister. The irony is, when the girls ran away, they weren't even living with either parent. So they were actually, at the time, forced to live with his sister. But be that as it may, that's basically the story in a nutshell. And the difference between the reality and the one that's being portrayed by the media in general.
Yeah. Well, this happens in these courts all the time, the refusal to allow evidence. And was a state court involved in that? Did I hear you correctly? A criminal court?
Correct. Right. It was tried in the court, Tony. The judge's name is Karen Asfog, and you're absolutely right. Not allowing evidence in is a great way for a judge to manipulate an outcome. And not only does it happen a lot, the general public has no idea it happens. The media doesn't report on judges who, in a ham-handed way, don't allow evidence in some sort of pattern. They don't ever look at stuff like that.
Right.
You're not going to get much reporting on that. But you're absolutely right. Not allowing evidence in, it's very common in family court. It's very common in criminal court. It's very common in probate court. In probate court, if there's evidence that the purported ward might not be incompetent, they're not going to let that in. They'll just say,
no.
You can't put this in. You know, you had Martin Patterson on, and this is not exactly a simile or whatever you want to call it, but you know, he had like a he had an evaluation, and the judge said, "Well, that's too old. Go get another one." And that's sort of the same type of idea. That he, in his case, he had an evaluation that he was fine and competent, and the judge just didn't allow the evaluation in. And, you know, judges always give their reason, not always. The judge gave whatever reason. The reality is, if that evaluation was allowed, they have to release him from guardianship. And that's the real reason why that evaluation wasn't allowed. And, you know, you have similar things here. And, yeah, look, even in family court, like, one of the professionals who was brought in, there's an audio recording by her daughter. The professional said, "Don't even talk to me about abuse unless you have video of it. There is no abuse unless you have video of it." So the only evidence of abuse that these professionals were going to accept would be video. And, you know, and as the girl said, like, as if, when my mom is being beaten up, and this is, I'm paraphrasing, but it's exactly what she thought, as if while my mom is being beaten up, what I would do is go grab a video camera or my iPhone and make sure to document the moment, as if that's what would happen.
Wow.
And, yeah, you see that all the time, unfortunately, and it's something that's underreported.
Well, when it comes to the whole probate system, which includes family court and child custody and all of that, they don't have to accept rules of evidence. Because it's code, statute, and regulation, it does an end run around the law, the actual common law. And so they get away, and they don't have to follow civil rules of civil procedure, the federal rules. But it surprises me that in a state court, a judge got away with that, because they are required to follow rules of evidence. And they... Go ahead.
They're not. You know, there's a quote of mine right from the start of the book where I said nothing that Judge David Knudsen did was technically allowed. However, in that courtroom, the judge can do whatever he or she wants, and they're only limited in their power by the judges above them who are supposed to temper when they get out of line. The reality is, once you get into a courtroom, the judge can do whatever he or she wants. Technically, if it's unconstitutional, you should be able to appeal, and it'll get overturned. Now, as we show in this particular case, the appeals court judges were more interested in protecting Knudsen, who was very interested in covering up the abuses of David Ruckey, than they were, in my opinion, of following the law, following the Constitution, and making sure that justice is served. Now, in theory, in criminal court, when this is appealed, it will be overturned. But will the judges on that, you know, it'll be a Minnesota appeals court, will they want to let the public know just how unfair that trial was? And I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Is there any link, Mike, between him, David Ruckey, and the judge and the attorneys, anybody involved in this? Have you been able to establish any link other than, you know?
I haven't been able to establish any direct links, but David Ruckey clearly has a lot of friends. I've been able to establish that. I don't know what David Knudsen's motivation was. I do know that he has a lot of power, and I think that the judiciary never expected for this case to be as drawn out and as publicized as it was, and they had to cover up because it was Knudsen who ordered. And by the way, he ordered this based on a telephonic conference based on a letter from a psychiatrist who 10 days before writing the letter had never heard the name Ruckey, or at least not maybe he had, but not as far as this family was concerned. He didn't know the 10 days before writing this letter, the psychiatrist hadn't even met the Ruckey family or knew they existed. And then there's a telephonic conference where his letter is so important that on an emergency basis they remove Sandra Grazini-Rucki from her home. And I should mention, Sandra met with this guy for less than a half hour. So obviously it's more than enough time for him to make a fair diagnosis of what she had. You know, look, let me just really briefly, the title came from my writing partner. And so Sandra Grazini-Rucki in the World's Last Custody Trial. And the reason she named it that is this custody trial was so FUBAR, and I don't know how much I'm allowed, but it's FUBAR is blanked up beyond all recognition, except it's not blank, but you can, you know what it means. This custody trial was so FUBAR that hopefully it'll be the last, it won't be the last one, but hopefully we'll get to the last one. And, you know, hopefully this case serves that we need to look at custody in a whole new way, that these custody trials, they make no sense whatsoever. And I should mention, at the actual custody trial, Michelle McDonald, my co-author, was forced to conduct part of it handcuffed with no shoes, pen, computer, eyeglasses, four clients, and they scheduled the custody trial with two of the five children missing. So, yeah, you want to talk about FUBAR. You have a lawyer strapped to a wheelchair with no client, no shoes, no computer, no pen, and with two of the five kids missing, and they went ahead and moved forward with the custody trial anyway. So, obviously, it's FUBAR. And, you know, to some degree, they've all gotten away with it, and they can mostly thank 2020, and then Minneapolis Star Tribune reporter Brandon, the other guy is Michael Broadcorp over, he used to be at the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and he's since moved on. This guy, Broadcorp, is really interesting. He's a political reporter. The Minneapolis Star Tribune hosted his blog, and he somehow found this story. And even though he's a political reporter, he never done family court before. He's fixated, not with family court. He became fixated with family court, I understand. But with this case, so he's a political reporter fixated with this case for whatever reason. And you know, right from the beginning, you know, Broadcorp claimed that the girls were transported in a red pickup truck, and there's a videotape of the red pickup truck transporting the girls away. As it turned out, the girls were transported in a sedan, and they didn't meet the sedan for several blocks. And somehow he got a photo of this red pickup truck. And what's really interesting is David Rucki owns a red pickup truck. Now, I don't know if it's the same one in the photo. I just know that the one in the photo and the one in the description, and the reason I know he owns a red pickup truck is that's what they say he owned in one of his arrests where he got into a road rage incident, and they said what he owned. I mean, it was the exact same kind of truck. So those are the people they can think, because those people, it's not hard to tell the truth, because, you know, it's not hard to uncover some of these things. But they've chosen, for whatever reason, not to do it, and as a result, a picture has been painted one way. And it, you know, this is it's a great example of how propaganda works. The whole entire thing is propaganda. There's overwhelming evidence of abuse. It's being ignored, and the media is pretending like it's not there. And that's propaganda. You know, it's not any different than any other forms of propaganda. And all of the people who have done this, they can thank the Michael Broadcorps of the world, the 2020s of the world, and a few other places, because they're chiefly responsible.
Well, you know, and that's the thing, too. People seem to think that if there's a paid writer in a newspaper or there's somebody on TV supposedly reporting the news, that they are actual journalists or actual researchers or reporters, when in fact they're basically just hired actors. And in my own experience with writing for a local paper, they couldn't figure out why the draw was to someone like me, who didn't have all these big credits and a big name and everything else. But it clearly, the people I talked to that were supposedly paid professionals on any topic you chose, they couldn't tell you anything about it other than what they had put in an article, which was information that was handed to them. And
Right.
This is exactly what I'm hearing here. Specific information was handed to these people to skew this a certain direction, and this is exactly what, in the truth be damned, you know, they didn't even care. And how long has this Sandra been in jail now?
All right, well, let's talk about that. So she was convicted on September 21st, and then she gets sentenced to a year and a day. Now, when she was first picked up, she was first picked up in October of 2015, she wound up spending almost about 6 months in jail. So she would have had like 3.5 to 4 months left when you take time off for good behavior. But what the judge did was it's called staggered, though really I've talked to lawyers, and I can't think of one lawyer who's ever heard of this being done. So it's called staggered, but I don't know if it even has a term. The judge had her serve 30 days right away, and then another 15 days on the anniversary of the girls being found for the following 6 years. So she basically gets a 6-year sentence as though it's 1 year. And there was recently a big news story about how she was picked up again for violating her parole. Now, her parole is basically, it's impossible not to violate it because it includes 3,400. She's got to follow 3,400 family court orders. But it's impossible for her to follow it because, number one, she has no money. She has no way of getting a job. And there's all kinds of fees and other things. So she was recently picked up. And the irony is, the longer she stays in jail now, the better that is for her, because if she can serve out her sentence, then the probation that goes along with it goes away, and she doesn't have to follow any of the rest of the court's orders because she served out the sentence. So, ironically, the terms of the jailing and probation are so draconian that she's better off violating the probation and trying to get her sentence served, which is what she wanted to do in the first place. She just wanted to do it all at one time. And this judge gave her the maximum and then told her to serve it over 6 years. And again, the judge's name is Karen Asfog. This is a judge who, in my opinion, if I saw her on the other end of a McDonald's register, I'd move to another register because I wouldn't trust this judge to take my order correctly, let alone be a judge.
Yeah, holy crap. And the kids now are all living with him.
Correct. And one of the five kids turned that's Nico, that's the oldest child. I am the oldest son, but obviously if you're the oldest child, you're the oldest son. But as we document, number one, we document how it happened, and we document how he's pretending like the things he didn't say before. The things he did say before he didn't say, because the media has only found a few of the things. Like, the media has never asked him, if you say that your dad is not violent, why did you tell CPS when you were 13 years old that when you were 8 years old, he put a gun to your head? You know, that's not violent.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty violent.
Exactly.
They don't know. You know, the media doesn't ask him that question. But yeah, no, they're all living with him now. Two of them are over 18. One of the things that I got was an interview done. So her oldest daughter, one of the two daughters who were missing, she did an interview with the police, and she reiterated that her dad's an abuser, that it was her idea to run away, all of these things that if you, and the entire police report is in the book. It's the only thing in the appendix. You can read the entire police report or police interview. So what the judge did was she didn't allow the police interview in. And then she made her daughter, like, she did it by Skype. She did the testimony by Skype with her aunt in the room, her dad just outside of the room, and she limited the number of questions that Sandra's lawyer could ask her. Can you imagine that? Is that even you think, is that allowed? Yeah, no, it's allowed. I'm telling you, if the judge wants it, it's allowed. But yeah, so the two oldest are over 18. That was the original question he had. And they're all living with him. She hasn't seen any of her children since the beginning of 2013, and it's unlikely she'll ever see any of her children again.
That is, oh, my God. And this guy, and I can't believe they gave these kids to this man. Now, even if it wasn't allowed to be brought out in court, you know damn well that judge knew that this guy was dangerous.
The judge knew because the judge was disallowing the evidence which proved
right.
it. The judge knows, all the judges know, and we go through all of the evidence that's put in front of all of these judges that they ignored. And there are other judges, and certainly it's this guy, David Knutson. David Knutson, I wouldn't trust him to do anything. I wouldn't trust him to I wouldn't cross the street if I saw him anywhere near, because who knows what that guy would do if you're trying to cross the street. But, they all knew the evidence because they all hid the evidence. And they did it anyway. This is the entire judiciary. I won't go into the story. The U.S. Marshal Service, completely corrupt in this case. Completely corrupt. That's how far it plus Marshal Service is a part of the Department of Justice. We go into the story. It shows how clearly corrupt they are. They get played and they go along with it, which is corruption. When you're told something that isn't true, and then you, even though you now know the truth, you follow through anyway, that's corrupt. So that's how far this thing extends, all the way to the U.S. Marshal Service. The prison system in Minnesota, the police department in Lakeville, Minnesota, where these people live, the family court and the criminal court. I mean, you basically have nearly every institution from local to county to state to national involved, and they're all corrupt.
Shame it, Chris. Well, and I can believe that, too, when you see stuff that goes on around here. I live outside of, any metro area, and but the stuff that goes on, the corruption in the police departments alone is enough to make you gag. But this goes on in these courtrooms every day. Have her children, do you know, Mike, have her children tried to contact her?
I don't know that they've tried to contact her, and to be honest, if I did, that would be probably something that I couldn't say anyway, but I don't have any evidence they've tried to contact her. Her daughters, her two oldest daughters obviously saw her for a little while on the day they ran away. That was April 19, 2013. And also for part of that time, and it's very complicated. I don't know if she's allowed to contact them. It's all a part of her probation. So right now, I don't think she's really even allowed to contact them. And certainly for long periods of time, she wasn't allowed to contact them. Because she's deemed a parent alienator. So people who propagate this kind of stuff, they also propagate this kind of solution. She is, if you're deemed a parent alienator, you need to be removed entirely from your children's lives so that the brainwashing as these people see it needs to be undone. And so she was removed from her children's lives, and the irony is, well, they must be really brainwashed, because now it's 4 years later and she's still not allowed to see them. So, they're so brainwashed that, the process to get these thoughts out of their head still hasn't been completed. So,
right.
And as I said, I doubt she'll ever see her children again. It'll be a long time before she does.
Well, when we had you on before about your other book, Chris Mahoney, was that his name?
The name of the book.
Yeah.
Let me see. Bullied to Death, Chris Magny's Kafkaesque Divorce.
Yeah.
These two books, it's two sides of the same coin. Chris Magny was falsely accused of being a violent person when he wasn't. Here, real allegations of violence are ignored. And this is how much of a crisis the family court system is. On a micro level, and depending on the court, depending on the judge, depending on the region, both of these things are happening. Sometimes they're happening in the same court. Sometimes one judge in one court will go overboard allowing false allegations of abuse, while another judge is dismissing all allegations of abuse. So these are two sides of the same coin. That's how much of a crisis point family court is at, that we both have a crisis of false allegations of abuse, which I cover in the other book, and a crisis of real allegations of abuse being ignored.
Well, the thing is, Mike, I saw this in an article I read somewhere, that who wins the case? whatever the case is dependent upon who shows up with the most money. And you see this reflected in these, both of these cases, on each of them, like you say, a separate side of the coin. Who showed up with the most money? In this case, her husband did. In the
It in the book. We show it in the book. She actually showed up with a lot of money, but what he did was in a slick way, like basically through a war of attrition, made sure she ran out of her money and he still had a lot of money left over.
Yeah,
but she actually started with over $1 million. Prosecute the divorce. And she did have money, but that goes quick. And then by the time Michelle McDonald came in, she got a very, very small retainer, which should have lasted her like 3 or 4 months, and she's still on her case 3 years later. You're absolutely right. Though I do want to mention, in this case, it's really even more insidious that they figured out a way to bleed her dry of money as well.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Money drives it. Follow the money. That was certainly the case in Chris Matney's case, where his father-in-law, his ex-father-in-law, had $50 to $100 million. David Ruckey, same type of wealth, so he has more than enough money. And by the way, David Ruckey is now claiming to be on public assistance.
What?
So, yeah, you can believe all of that. And so on top of everything else, in order to maximize the child abuse, the child support that he's trying to get, David Ruckey claimed to be on public assistance. What he basically did was he sold the business. He gave the business to his sister, who then becomes the owner on paper.
Uh-huh.
And she writes him checks. And then he claims that he only makes $5,000 a month. And, you know, like he's able to, for a period of time during the summer, he had two lawyers. So here's a guy who makes $5,000 a month, takes care of five kids, and somehow he's able to pay two lawyers at the same time. I mean, you know, that's like $800 an hour. For the period of time when you have both lawyers, I don't know, you know, what were you... You know, you're claiming to make $5,000 a month. How do you pay two lawyers at the same time? So that's how far this guy's, like, criminal mind extends. And we show other stuff in the book. He got involved in this hockey association just so he could basically use it as his own piggy bank. You know, there's all kinds of things that this guy does, and we detail it in the book. You know, he stalks people, threatens people. People up, anything and everything. But you're absolutely right. In general, it does follow the money. And in this case, he had more money. And in most of these cases, and that's how the decision follows the money. Well, you know, is the allegation of abuse real? Well, how much money does the person make in the allegation? Oh, I'll tell you, well, then it's real. You know, you're on welfare? Right. Well, then it must not be real. And that is general works. You're absolutely right. And, you know, we reference other stories, but in almost every story I've covered, there's an element of that.
I just, you know, I think it's just such a statement about how society has devolved. And I can remember, you know, I think I discussed this with you briefly before, years ago when I was a young woman getting a divorce, and I fought to keep my children, was lucky to come away with them, because it was all lopsided the other way. As a woman, you just had no rights. You had no, you couldn't claim title to any property. I lived in Iowa at the time, and they didn't change that law until 1984. I was considered chattel property, the same as the house, the car, everything. So I've always viewed, and I admit this bias, I've always viewed with skepticism these stories from men about how they're being abused by these courts. And, you know, they're suffering right now what women have suffered historically in these courtrooms. You have no rights and the truth makes no difference. And but I think it has gone far beyond just a gender issue. It is now, you know, as we've talked about, simply about who's got the most money, how much can we get out of you, how long can we drag this out so we can get some more out of you. And it's never about the children, it's never about their welfare in the probate system, it's never about the elderly, it's who's got the money and how can we get it. And that's all it seems to get down to.
And in this case, and actually just in case, there's actually, in both cases, and I discussed this more in my first book, Bully to Death, But in this case, she was falsely, she meaning Sandra Grazini-Rucki, was falsely accused of being a parent alienator. Well, this whole idea of parental alienation, there's an enormous amount of money behind it. And when someone is accused, that is the opportunity for a plethora of court professionals to make a lot of money. So, first of all, even before there was officially an accusation, but the judge basically deemed, here's how unconstitutional this judge was. He basically deemed that the court should investigate allegations of parental alienation on his own. So before she was even formally accused, he brings in a guardian ad litem. The guardian ad litem then says we should have two parenting coordinators. And then after that, you have a therapist. And then you have another. By the end, there were five or six different of these court professionals all looking into this idea of parental alienation. And the thing is that all of these court professionals have an inherent conflict of interest to say it's parental alienation, because if they say there's abuse, they go away. If they say there's parental alienation, there's more business for them.
Yes.
And this happens. So I interviewed a woman named Joy Silbert. You should actually sometime have her on the show, but she runs the Leadership Council for Interpersonal Violence. I think I'm getting it right. Most people just call it the Leadership Council. And they did a survey in 2007 where they found that 58,000 children per year as of 2007 are forced to live with an abuser, like these five Rucki kids. So they're part of this survey, though the survey happened before this case. And I asked Dr. Silver, what is the main reason for that? And she said it's protective parents being falsely accused of being parent alienators. So what happens is, so now these 58,000 kids are put in these abusive homes, and the court professionals have a perpetual need to be on the case, because if kids are living with an abuser, it's never fine. There's always going to be problems.
Right.
And, I've done a lot of articles on it. One of the most extreme cases, I'm forgetting everybody's name. But her first name is Sunny, and she's out of Connecticut, where she accused her ex of sexually molesting their son, and then he accused her of being a parent alienator. And there were 12 court professionals, all of them hiding the allegations of abuse. So you see it all the time. There's a ton of money. Now, there's also a bunch of money in false allegations of abuse as well. Sunny Kelly is her name. And I should also mention the Tribune reporter, his name is Brandon Stahl. And can I tell a quick story about Stahl? So this guy, Brandon Stahl, the girls ran away in 2013. There were already problems in the custody before the girls ran away in April of 2013. He doesn't write an article ever until the two-year anniversary of the girls running away. Does that seem right? You haven't written one article, and for whatever reason, you decided to write one on the two-year anniversary of the girls running away. So here's what I found out about the guy. He wrote that article on, I think it was April 19th was the two-year anniversary. He wrote that article to be published on April 19th. Obviously, he worked on it in anticipation. But so in January of 2015, a third party contacted, she contacted Saul, and they wanted him to look at the Sandra Grazini-Rucki case. And he said he wouldn't do it because Dale Mason was involved, and Dale Mason is this disbarred lawyer who was helping Sandra for a little while. And so then in April of 2015, he publishes the article, and who is his star interview? Dale Mason, who tells him that he was in the car with Sandra the night that they picked up the girls. So think about that. In January of 2015, he wants no part of this story because Dale Mason is involved and he's a disbarred lawyer, and that makes it bad. In April of 2015, Gail Mason is the star interview in a story about the same case. And by the way, I asked him, it was great, I asked him if it was true that this April 2015 article was his first one, and he said, yeah, no, it's my first one, I didn't write anything before that. And I was like, well, here's what I heard. I heard in January of 2015, you looked at this and you said you didn't want any part of it because of Dale Mason. So why was this your star interview in April of 2015? Now, if he answers me,
yeah,
it'll come now, but I asked him about 10 months ago. So, you know, he has no answer for that. That's how corrupt these guys are. That is how corrupt these guys are. They can tell you one thing in January and do something completely different in April.
Right.
Okay, so I weirded us a little bit off track. Do you have another question?
Well, the thing is, when they did pick it up, were they interested in doing any more on it? And how did 2020 get involved?
Right. When they picked it up, they fixated on the girl's disappearance, who might be responsible, and any rumor about who might be responsible. At one point, and for a little while, my co-writer, Michelle McDonald, we have a great anecdote. It involves J.B. Cooper about how ridiculous this was, that they called my co-writer a quote-unquote person of interest. This is the police. Now, keep in mind, person of interest is not a real term. It's a made-up term. There is no such thing
right.
as person of interest. The police don't use that. Right? They say suspects. Okay. So she, a police officer in a Brandon Soule article called her a person of interest. So what they did was they focused on where are these girls, who hid them, and they didn't focus on why. And since they were focusing on where these girls are, who hid them, and then when they were found, who's responsible for hiding them, what is their criminal responsibility, none of them focused on why the girls ran away. See, like, what the media is asking you to believe is, and by the way, they were found on a horse farm for abused children. So what the media wants you to believe is that two girls ran away on their own, lived with strangers, just because they were so sick of their parents warring in a divorce. That's what the media will... Does it seem reasonable to believe that any parent's divorce was so awful that two of the five kids would run away and stay away with strangers simply because the divorce was so bitter? Does that seem possible?
Well, yeah, it seems possible, but highly unlikely.
Right. So the media doesn't really ever dig into these questions, and they've sort of picked at like the edges a little bit. There's a local article which is clearly quoting from a police report where one of the other daughters was describing how she's being abused, not by David Rucky, but by a sister who this girl is about to be forced to live with, where the girl says, well, I'm going to run away if you force me to live with my aunt, you know, because she abuses me. This is what they're saying. And then they're like, oh, and then the girls ran away. So that's how the media covers it. So they don't feel the need to cover any of these other things. There are passing mentions that Michelle McDonald, my co-writer, was forced to conduct this custody trial in handcuffs. There are passing mentions of it. I think that's pretty important.
Yeah,
kidding.
Most people... What was the reason they did this to her?
Well, the reason he did it to her, I can't answer that. It's right now it's being litigated. I should say there's a $7.5 million lawsuit right now that's making its way forward. But the reason they did it to her, I can only speculate, and I can give you my opinion.
Okay.
It was a custody trial. And Michelle had done a good job of presenting her side, and she needed to not be able to continue doing a good job presenting her side. And then they needed to have, like, an excuse for coming down with the verdict that they came down. Keep in mind, it was as a result of this custody trial that guy Knutson said sole custody to the father. He said that Sandra could see the girls only after she had completed psychological evaluations. That's another bogus. So, I mean, first of all, you know, What planet, or, you know, like, who in their right mind says you can only see your children after you've completed a psychological evaluation?
Yeah.
Not like somebody else's children. I mean, like, that should be completely, any normal human being should reject that entirely. But the other thing is, what these evaluations are, is it's a friend of the judges who
right.
then will say, well, you're not quite ready to see your kids now. If you agree to see a psychiatrist 2 times a week, 2 hours per day, then we'll revisit it in 3 months. And then in 3 months, you say, well, another 3 months, and just keep going. And that's
right.
how they hook you in. And then when you say no, they say you're being uncooperative. So this is,
right.
and this is repeatedly, there's a woman named Susan Skip. I documented her case. That's exactly what they try to do to her. She refused to see her kids. And every time she asked, they say, well, you're the one who won't see a psychiatrist, like the judge said. As if a judge knows if a parent should see a psychiatrist.
Right.
So, you know.
Well, that's part of the gaming of these courts. All their buddies and their drunk uncles who can't get a job set up all kinds of shops, and then the courts mm-hmm. funnel them business mm-hmm. and they tell you you're under court order, you must. And mm-hmm. personally, I would refute any of that. I don't blame anyone. And as far as psychiatrists goes, how many have we caught, Mike, writing letters to the court saying, if this doesn't work, tell me what you need and I'll write up something else? We do it all the time.
It's
what happened to this attorney. This has happened to many attorneys who actually tried to defend their clients. They get disbarred, mm-hmm. they get sanctioned, they get maligned, castigated, torn up, run out of business. We see this all the time. Her mistake was she was doing a good job.
Right, and that's exactly what they try to do, and they didn't do that good a job of it, but that's what they try to do to Michelle McDonald. And that was another reason why you have her handcuffed, to humiliate her.
Right.
You know, to make her look like she's crazy. And now, you know, in some press, they say, well, she's crazy. You know, they had to constrain her while she was in court. Like, nobody explains why it happens. So, you know, she's crazy. Now, you know, what's interesting is Michelle McDonald, she's been a lawyer for, I think, 29 years. Now, before the Ruckey case, she was basically an insider. All right. She was on all of the Bar Association this, the Bar Association that. People liked her. She made tons of money. No one thought she was crazy. And suddenly
right.
she takes the Ruckey case, and now, they had a constrainer. Well, you know, like in the 90s, nobody had a constrainer. Now, what's the difference? Now, she didn't go crazy. She's not crazy, okay? The difference is she took on a case that powerful people need to cover up, and so they need to make her look crazy, and the media goes along with it. And
uh-huh.
that specifically is Brandon Stahl, Michael Broadcorp. Sandra told me Stahl talked to her for 2 hours once, and then the follow-up article, she said she had no comments. I mean, that's how much of a scumbag this guy Stahl is. Can you imagine that? You talk
yeah.
to somebody for 2 hours, and he says she had no comments. You had 2 hours worth of comments. This kind of stuff is blatant. A lot of people come to me and they say, my story is the worst, my story is the most corrupt. This is the worst and most corrupt story I've ever covered, easily. And it's because it spreads through so many different layers, and there's so many different layers of corruption. There are very
mm-hmm.
few stories where a media magazine like 2020 is in on the corruption. And I think you mentioned earlier how they did it. What they basically did in 2020 was they asked questions in such a narrow way.
Yes.
That the answer was, I can't provide you the evidence you're asking for. So they said, are there any police reports of physical abuse during the marriage? Now, that's the question that this lady, Elizabeth Vargas, and by the way, if you want to send her an email, that's elizabeth.a.vargas@abc.com. Ask her if this is correct, if what I'm about to say is correct. So
okay.
Elizabeth Vargas, she asked that question, are there any police reports of physical abuse from during the marriage? Now, let me ask you a question. Do you believe that Ike beat up Tina Turner?
Yes.
Okay, now, why do you believe that? There are no police reports of physical abuse from during the marriage. Why do you believe that?
Because he continued to beat on her after they were divorced.
No, I think you believe it because Tina Turner's talked about it. He didn't. They separated after they separated. This just came out. You believe him because Tina Turner just said it. You didn't have to have the police reports. But by the way, number one, do you think Elizabeth Vargas would have the gumption to ask Tina Turner that question?
No.
It's okay. It's okay to ask Sandra Guzzini Rocky if you have any police reports of physical abuse from during your marriage. And by the way, 2020 had all of the police reports. They just deemed that most of them were irrelevant because they didn't fit their pattern. One of the police reports from right after the marriage ended, Sandra said she didn't report him earlier because she was afraid of what he'd do when he got out of jail. So I don't know why they'd asked if there were any police reports of physical abuse from during the marriage when they should have known there aren't, and they should have known why. And it's a perfectly reasonable mindset to have if you're being beaten up, that you don't want to report that, because when the person gets out and comes back home, he's going to start beating you up again.
Yeah, exactly.
So by doing that, they just kept saying, well, we didn't see any police reports of physical abuse from during the marriage. And then the other thing they did was, they, in a very subtle way, kept shifting the question to things which they should have had evidence for and pretended like they didn't. Like they said, that's why evidence of David Ruckey being violent is so critical. Well, David Ruckey's gotten into a bar fight. He's gotten into a road rage incident. He frightened his neighbors so much they put a videotape on top of their house. Frightened his in-laws so much that he got an order for protection. There's plenty of evidence that David Ruckey is violent. But 2020 provides none of it. Can you imagine your guy that has a bar fight and a road rage incident on his criminal resume, and you say that's why evidence of this guy being violent is so critical, and you don't mention this evidence? You pretend like you don't know it? And this is what they did, and that's how you do propaganda. We go through it, and there's tons of examples of this throughout the broadcast that we pick apart. And that's why I think it's the most corrupt, because I've never seen a media magazine like this, and I've never seen the corruption spread from the local police officer, from the local police station, all the way deep into the Department of Justice and everywhere in between. This is a story of a sea of corruption, a cacophony. Oh, that's a great word. A cacophony of corruption. So it's everywhere. And look, unless enough people know the truth, the corruption will continue in this case and in cases like others. And that leads me to my last point. That's why you should buy the book, Sandra Guzzini Rocky and the World's Class Custody Trial. So go to Amazon, go to Barnes & Noble, go to Books A Million, whatever's your favorite online retailer. Just plug that in and pick it up.
Yep, I think so. You know, I think, Mike, if people knew, if the common person out here knew how corrupt this whole system is from top to bottom, the whole thing needs to be dismantled, in my opinion. But anyway, we're down to the end of our time, Mike.
They will know it if they pick this book. They will know it if they pick this book up. So that's another reason to pick this up.
Our guest tonight was Mike Volpe, author of Sandra Guzzini Rocky and the World's Last Custody Trial. This is a must read if you want to know what kind of corruption goes on in these courts on a daily basis. This thing just kind of epitomizes all of that. We will be back tomorrow night with Voices Carry for Animals with Debbie Dahmer. Wednesday night, the Wild Horse Show is taking a break. They've got a lot going on. I'll be back Thursday night with Whistleblowers, of course, and on Friday morning with Tim King on the Vietnam Veterans Show. And we will be back Sunday night, of course, and with the show on guardianship or the probate courts. So it's going to be a busy week. I hope you all tune in. Thanks to everybody who did tune in this evening. Mike, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yep. Talk to y'all later, everybody.